This is John Rappaport, and this is part two of AIDS and COVID. Okay. So in part one, I described the mirror images and the parallels between HIV/AIDS and COVID. I may want to review a few of those here, but I also want to stress in part two here, the differences, because of course there are. Essentially, AIDS, HIV, swine flu of 2009, SARS of 2003, Zika, Ebola, West Nile, bird flu, etc. These were test runs. They were an attempt to figure out how to do it right from the point of view of the fascists. How to get complete control politically, economically, physically, mentally over the population. Not through the spreading of a disease, but using the story. Nothing but a story about that to accomplish that end. And there were fits and starts and mistakes, and as in any intelligence type operation, you always have after reports. How did we do? How did it go? What did we learn? What mistakes did we make? How can we improve? This is what intelligence type operations do. They run an op. They have a cover story. They dispense false trails for people to go down. And they also do after reports. And they try to learn how to do it better the next time. That's what they did. So, the lockdowns. That was one, obviously, great difference between AIDS and COVID. They engineered lockdowns, brutal lockdowns of the planet, starting with China. There's a great deal that I could say about that. But the op basically was China does the initial 50 million people lockdown suddenly, just as the, quote, pandemic is being declared. And then everybody else who's anybody falls into line and praises China and says that's a great thing to do. That's what China should have done. That's the model. It's like an entertainer up on stage, and he's got plants in the audience, people who are laughing and applauding, and it becomes contagious in the audience because the influencers are leading the way. I mean, this is how it's done. So China does the lockdowns, and then you get the admirers. The influencers, the World Health Organization, releases a statement. This is great. Bill Gates, yes, great. The press, the fawning press. China has delivered what needed to be delivered. And then, of course, later would come the retraction as well. China didn't act soon enough. And all of those were all the diversions from the op, which is China locks down 50 million, maybe more, people overnight. A shocker. It's so big that it can't fail to impress. And then what happens? Italy, follow suit. That was the second big domino to fall. No accident. They needed a Western country to follow suit. China is hugely invested in Italy, whose government is, you know, a mess, whose budget, whose finances are a mess, deeply, deeply in debt. China comes in with all kinds of investment money, building a port, etc., etc., the usual kind of operation to influence a government. And all of a sudden, overnight, Italy locks down. In fact, so swiftly done by the head of government in Italy that the governors, the executives leading the provinces in Italy, didn't even know it was happening until it happened. Now they had a beachhead in the West, and then on and on it went with massive publicity, favorable promotion. Yes, this is what we have to do. And then we had Fauci, we had Trump stepping aside, basically, albeit reluctantly, but stepping aside and putting in Anthony Fauci as the interim president of the United States, the de facto president, locked down America. The lockdowns were incredibly brutal, and they were aimed at what you could call the mom and pops, the businesses, the entrepreneurs, the single owner private companies, not the gigantic corporations. Everything that could be quickly and immediately destroyed and ruined economically by lockdowns, so that they all became distressed properties that would go bankrupt, that would close their doors, that could be bought off for pennies on the dollar by giant financiers and investors and so on. Because, hey, even though the operation called COVID is really about controlling the entire population of the planet and ushering in a new world order and brave new world, people have to make money at the same time. And they do, and they did. And they are. So, now, on the heels of no discovered virus, no existing virus, suddenly the virus becomes the gigantic object of fear porn, and everybody has to lock down to stop the spread. And destroy economies, which was the operation, the heart and soul of the operation. Brutal, brutal. If you're not a business owner who actually suffered greatly under the lockdowns, you need to put yourself in the mindset of somebody who did, to imagine what it was like to suddenly have to shut down with no recourse. You were doing business, now you're not doing business. Good luck. How are you going to survive? You've got a family. You've got bills to pay. Your profit margins aren't that great to begin with. Restaurants, gyms, little stores, little grocery stores. I mean, on and on and on and on. Destruction, destruction, destruction. Everywhere. Nothing to do with a non-existent virus. Just pure destruction with a cover story. And then you had corporations lining up like hogs at the trough for their bailout money, because they had to shut down certain operations as well, and they went along. And there are backstories as to why that happened as well. Not the least of which are giant investment funds holding majority positions in those corporations, and those investment funds are run by people who are heavily wired into the medical complex, like Larry Fink, sitting on the boards of hospitals and so forth and so on, and you see the handwriting on the wall. The corporations are going to go along. They're not going to rebel. Now, in order for this to work, there was another difference between COVID and AIDS, and that was the wall-to-wall messaging that accompanied the first declaration of the pandemic. That was another lesson learned from all of the fake epidemics that preceded COVID. We can't just have some of the press on our side and some of the governors and some of the city mayors and some of the presidents of other countries. It can't be a mixed bag with lots of heavy hitter rebels going against the official declarations. We have to have unanimity and wall-to-wall messaging. And that structure has to be in place. And it was, finally, by 2020. And that made all of the difference, because you had all the news outlets, all the major wire services, the overwhelming majority of political leaders around the world, all falling into line. And you could, you know, I could continue to tell backstories about that. World Economic Forum and their School for Future Global Leaders that prepared all of these global leaders like Trudeau, Gavin Newsom, and so forth, Merkel, for such an event. The wall-to-wall messaging was in place. Brutal. I can't use that word too often as to the effects of the lockdowns. And only recently have we begun to see the, quote, studies that say, well, actually, the destruction of the lockdowns is far worse than the virus. And even major media are kind of letting that. You know, but nobody's really paying attention. Because it's all in the rearview mirror now, so what? Okay. So now I want to get to the vaccine, because, of course, the COVID vaccine is another major difference between AIDS and COVID, because there was no vaccine in the days of AIDS. No vaccine for AIDS, HIV. So I'm not going to try to go deep into all of the data about vaccine injuries and deaths, except to say the following. Right now, as I'm reporting this on May 1st, 2022, there are roughly 1,200,000 reports in the federal database of the U.S. of vaccine injuries and tens of thousands of reports of deaths. Okay, so underreporting is the main feature of the federal database when you look at it as a whole. And this was confirmed in the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare study of years ago when the authors concluded that if you wanted to get an accurate count of vaccine injuries, you would take the reported number and multiply it by 100. Okay, we've had other estimates. You multiply it by 10, you multiply it by 40, but whichever figure you choose, it's going to be enormous. Far more than would ordinarily be necessary for the government to absolutely stop the vaccine program and say this is a disaster and we have to rethink the whole thing and we can't keep on with this. But of course, they didn't do that. So, however and why ever the vaccines are causing all of this damage, and of course, as you know, there have been many, many speculations from different sectors and people, it's happening. It's happening all over the world, and it's been exposed in, quote, alternative media, endlessly exposed, and yet the program goes on, and the messaging goes on. Safe and effective, remarkably safe, save the planet, blah, 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 blah. A vaccine for a virus that doesn't exist. So here's one of the blockbusters about the vaccine that nobody is talking about. And nobody seems to want to talk about it, with very few exceptions, I being one of those exceptions. This is one of those, hey, you're not supposed to say this, points. As I've laid out in part one, basically, the science of virology is no science at all, and I describe the insane version of discovering new viruses, which is totally bogus and non-scientific. So, if SARS-CoV-2, the virus, does not exist, then what is this spike protein that we keep hearing about? Huh? What is it? It's supposed to be one of the main features of the virus that doesn't exist. So, write down the time signature here when I'm starting to talk about this, because I think you're going to want to listen to this about 5 or 10 times. Everybody and his brother is saying spike protein, spike protein, spike protein. In fact, that's the whole message of what the vaccine is supposed to be doing. The RNA in the vaccine is supposed to be forcing the cells of the body to produce this spike protein, which then the immune system recognizes as an invader, learns from that, remembers. So if, quote, the real virus then comes along, the real virus which doesn't exist, the immune system will be ready to attack it. That's the whole premise of the vaccine. But since the virus itself doesn't exist, then what is this business about the spike protein is part of the virus? Are you listening? And let me go further, because I've gotten into a couple of little debates about this. I have seen no study, and I'm talking not about, we did a little bit of research, a few patients, we did something in the lab. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a major friggin' study of, say, 5,000 people at minimum, all of whom received the COVID vaccine, to confirm that the vaccine did what it's supposed to do, which is to force the cells of those 5,000 people's bodies to produce the spike protein. No such study that I have found, not even close. And people say, well, you don't really have to do a study like that because we know how the RNA does this. No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't know anything. You're lying all the way to the bank. You would think that if the entire purpose, listen up, of the vaccine is to get the body, the experimental vaccine, the technology that's never been deployed on the public before, if the entire purpose of that vaccine is to induce the body to produce a spike protein, a specific spike protein, then researchers would do an after study of many, many vaccinated people to confirm that indeed the vaccine did accomplish that goal, because it was the goal of the vaccine. You would think they would do that, right? But no. So all this chatter about the spike protein, this and this is what the spike protein is doing, and we know about this and we know about that. No, you don't. First, show me that study that I'm talking about here. Do that study honestly. Then we'll start talking. And of course, since the virus doesn't exist, why should we even care about the quote spike protein that's supposed to be part of the virus that's going to create immunity? That's like a double or triple sick joke. You get where I'm going with this, right? It's kind of like this. Humanity is in great danger. So the collective nations of the world have decided with cutting-edge technology to send out 50 million spaceships to planets that we have identified that can support human life. Okay? That's the solution. However, we're never going to do a study to check ever to see if those 50 million or any of them ever reach those planets. We're never going to do that study. Come on. Who are you bullshitting? Oh, the spike protein is wonderful and it's going to help save the planet. No, the spike protein is horrible. It's going to kill everybody. What spike protein? Show it to me. Do the study. This is one of those things you're not supposed to talk about. Oh, don't talk about that. Oh, it's too far out. No, it isn't. It's very far in. Very close in. Extremely close in. Oh, we know the spike protein travels throughout the... Really? How do you know that? How many patients have you studied actually? Well, we studied two. I see. And on the basis of what you say you found out with two humans, you feel confident that you understand what's happening to, I don't know, 3 billion humans. Okay. If you're that crazy, have fun. So, just like the virus doesn't exist, I see no convincing evidence that the spike protein exists. there. Okay? There. Now, let's get to another key vaccine issue. And this is another one apparently you're not supposed to talk about, because I've posted this article, I don't know, like 5-6 times by now. And as far as I can tell, nobody in the mainstream or the alternative world has really picked up on it and done anything with it. I've been screaming about it for a couple of years now. And it has to do not with the safety or the danger of the vaccine. It has to do with the efficacy from the point of view of the conventional research community, which of course believes the virus exists and the vaccine is there to induce immunity to the virus and all of that and all of that. So taking that, all right, let's assume just for the purposes of argument, let's start from that premise and see within the bubble world of those crazy people what they have shown and not shown. And this is all launching from an opinion piece that was published in the New York Times. It's going on almost, I think, got to be a year, maybe more, by Peter Doshi and Eric Tocpole, two researchers, mainstream researchers. Doshi is, he's a rebel, very good rebel, but he's also mainstream in some respects. And here's what they pointed out quite accurately. They wrote this opinion piece in the Times during the clinical trials of the vaccines, the major vaccines, all three of them. And they said, guess what? The actual design, the protocol of the clinical trials has a big problem. And the problem is that these clinical trials are designed only to show that the vaccine could prevent mild cases of COVID, not serious illness, severe illness, or hospitalization or death. The clinical trials are not designed to prove that the vaccine could prevent those eventualities. The clinical trials are designed only to prove that the vaccine could prevent a cough, fever, fatigue, chills, period. Mild cases of, quote, COVID. Boom, bang, pow, smash. And therefore, all of the bullshit claims during the clinical trials, after the clinical trials, after the release of the vaccine, all those statements about how, well, okay, we're discovering that the vaccine doesn't really inhibit transmission of the virus from person to person. It doesn't prevent a person from actually getting COVID, but it does definitely prevent serious illness, hospitalization, and death. No, it doesn't. Bullshit. But the design of the clinical trials prevented that. The design of the clinical trials was only to show that the vaccine could prevent a cough, chills, fever, which, by the way, naturally cures itself, just like a mild flu-like illness. You don't need a vaccine. You don't need a drug. You don't need anything except some rest and maybe a little whiskey and tea. Yeah. Why haven't people picked up on this? I have no idea. I mean, I know why mainstream hasn't picked up on this, but what about the so-called alternative journalists? Why haven't they picked up on it and hammered on it day after day? Don't know. Maybe it's because some of them still have one foot in the vaccine establishment, which is to say, they want to say that some vaccines are good, and they know that if this incredible scandal about the COVID vaccine clinical trials were to be exposed, the entire vaccine establishment from head to toe would be exposed as a rank fraud. And nobody would believe anything that anybody has to say about safe and effective vaccines after that. Could be. All right, so how were these clinical trials designed? I'm going to break it down for you. And I'm going to do it very specifically, clearly. Stay with me. Screw in your brains real tight here. The essence of these clinical trials was this. Because the vaccine makers and the researchers who conducted the clinical trials believed that SARS-CoV-2, the virus, was everywhere, spreading all over the planet, they also believed that it would descend out of the clouds and pounce on some of the volunteers in the clinical trials while they were either getting the vaccine or getting a saltwater placebo shot. That's how the clinical trials work. Some of these people are going to catch COVID. And that's what we want to have happen. Because then we can see who catches COVID and who doesn't. And if the people who are getting the saltwater placebo shot, if a lot more of those people catch COVID during the clinical trials than the people who got the vaccine, then we can say the vaccine is a big success and we'll get authorization from the FDA to release it. That's the theory. So how many cases total of COVID, mild cases of COVID, are we talking about before they stop the clinical trials? 150. 150 people who, quote, catch COVID are going to decide the fate of the whole planet with the vaccine, right? So, in this non-scientific scenario that I'm painting, that all the mainstream people believe in, let's say that of the 30,000 or so people in one of these clinical trials, let's say the Pfizer clinical trial of their vaccine, out of those 30,000 people, 150 people catch COVID. And 50 of those got the vaccine, and 100 got the saltwater placebo shot. Boom. Pop the champagne corks, baby. We're in. Because now we've shown that the vaccine is at least 50% effective, and we can get emergency authorization from the FDA. That's the way it works. And now, are you beginning to see what's going on here? Are you getting a glint? Are you beginning to see why mild cases of COVID are all that the vaccine is designed to prevent? Should. cough, chills, fever. That's what the clinical trials people are looking for. Because if they were saying, no, we have to wait until we have 150 cases total of serious COVID, meaning serious life-threatening pneumonia, they could be waiting for 50 years for that to happen. It might never happen that you would get 150 people out of the 30,000 in the clinical trial that come down with serious pneumonia. And so the clinical trial would never end, and you would never get an endpoint, and the vaccine would never be authorized. See it now? That's why they had to design the clinical trial to prevent only mild cases of COVID. And therefore, they produced nothing of value, even by mainstream science. Because who gives a shit about mild cases of cough, fever, chills? But that's why they had to do it that way. And that's why they did do it that way. Okay? And there's a further little flip to this whole thing. Let's suppose that once 150 people in the clinical trial were diagnosed with mild COVID, and they stopped the clinical trial and said, okay, now we have to just find out who got COVID, mild COVID, people who got the vaccine or the people who got the placebo shot. And they found out they didn't like the distribution of cases. 75 people who got the vaccine came down with mild COVID, and 75 people who got the placebo shot came down with mild COVID. Oh, baby. Oh, that's bad. That doesn't show the vaccine was effective at preventing mild COVID. No, 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 no. They wanted that 50 and 100 deal because that would have shown, hey, see, the vaccine was successful. Only 50 people who took the vaccine got COVID, but 100 people who got only the placebo shot, they got COVID. But it didn't work out that way. 75 and 75, that's bad. But now they've got an out, the vaccine makers. They can say, whoa, wait a minute. Look what we just found out. A whole bunch of those people who got the vaccine and came down with mild COVID, that wasn't really mild COVID, you see. That was just an adverse effect of the vaccine. Cough, chills, fever. Sure, that could happen from a vaccine. No big deal. FDA wouldn't be worried about that, like they would be if 75 people came down with life-threatening pneumonia and we said, that's an adverse effect of the vaccine. But hey, cough, chills, fever, no problem. We can say that, let's say, I don't know, 40 people who got the vaccine and were diagnosed with mild COVID. That wasn't really mild COVID. That was just a reaction to the vaccine. So let's see, 75 in the vaccine group got mild COVID. We subtract 40 from that, and we get 35. And we can say only 35 people that got the vaccine got mild COVID. The other 40, that was a vaccine reaction. So now we've got 35 people in the vaccine group that got mild COVID, and 75 in the placebo group that got mild COVID, and the vaccine is a success. Now, if you got to listen to that 16 times, what I've just went through here, do it. I've made it abundantly clear as to what the con and the hustle are here. If you're going, I'm not sure the numbers, listen to it again. Keep listening from as soon as I start talking about the opinion piece in the New York Times, and keep on listening because you're going to see the whole con of how the vaccine was authorized and how it doesn't make any difference and how the clinical trials were designed to do nothing more than prevent, you know, mild chills, cough, fever, which doesn't need a vaccine to prevent in the first place. You'll see the whole thing. I promise you, if you haven't already dug it and seen it and gotten it, you'll get it if you just keep listening to it. Can't make it any clearer than that. That's the hustle. That's the con. Nobody wants to talk about it. I want to talk about it. Because, look, if on their own terms, by their own standards, it's a bullshit vaccine that is not effective at doing anything, and it's designed that way, right? Then what do you have? You have nothing, nothing at all. Except injury and death. So you would think that all kinds of people would be hopping on to what I've just described here and riding that horse all the way, hammering on the doors of the CDC and the FDA and Fauci and Trump and Biden and World Health Organization and but no, not happening. Apparently, it's verboten to talk about this. Well, we don't really want to take that up. We don't really want to discuss that. Why not? Well, you know, I mean, would people really believe it if we told them? Oh, yeah, now we get to that whole thing. Would people really believe it if we told them? Because it's so outrageous, and yes, I grant you it may be true, but it's so outrageous that people, I don't know, they would be willing to accept it. Oh, yeah, they'll accept it if you keep shoving it down their throats and you keep simplifying it and repeating it and putting it in front of their faces. They'll get it. Little by little, and more press outlets, first the alternatives, will be forced to report on it and say, hey, look at what we just found out. And you'll get a gathering wave. That's how it happens, and it builds and builds, just like it happened with the PCR test. At first, nobody was questioning it except for maybe 50 people on the planet who knew all about it because they knew about, they were there during the AIDS scam. But gradually, that knowledge built, and at first that was not popular. Oh, you don't want to talk about the test. I mean, that's too complicated. People can't really understand how they've rigged the PCR to spit out false positives, and it's all a con, and it doesn't really detect the virus anyway, and and all of that. And you don't want to talk about it. Yes, I do want to talk about that. I'm going to keep talking about it. And I did, and more people did, and the reporters started to pick up on it, and even New York Times picked up on it, and on it went. And we didn't let it die. And then all of a sudden, everybody was an expert on the PCR test. Hey, yes. Do you know about the PCR test? Yeah, it's a total fraud. That's how it happens. It would happen the same this way. Do you know about the COVID vaccines? They're a total fraud. They were never designed to produce anything more than prevention of chills, cough, fever. Huh. Ridiculous. Of course, yeah. Everybody knows That's what would happen. So this is inside baseball that I'm giving you about how it works. When people say, oh, that's too much of a reach, you can't really tell people that because they would never believe you. Well, in my world, that's the red flag and the alarm bell that goes off that says it's time to tell people exactly that and keep telling them that. That's the way it works. That's the way it's supposed to work. And just to double back on the spike protein again, so people might be saying, okay, so Mr. Apple, what are you saying? Are you saying that it does exist or it doesn't exist? Or I'm saying we don't have any idea because no studies of the kind that I just described were ever done. So if they weren't done to prove that the spike protein is in the body of thousands of people, not just six, maybe six, after they got the vaccine, then everything that's being said about the spike protein is completely unfounded, unproven, and that's where we are. And to then assume that you know all about what's happening with the spike protein in the body is completely unwarranted. Period. Now, I can speculate on what I think a major study of vaccinated people who, you know, to look for the spike protein might reveal. But that would just be speculation. But suppose it turned out that out of 5,000 people you studied, 16 had the spike protein, maybe. What would that tell you about the vaccine, huh? Would that be something you're not supposed to talk about? Boy. Okay. Now, did you notice that the wall-to-wall messaging about the, quote, pandemic suddenly turned off in late February? Switch turned on, switch turned off. It was almost 2 years to the day from the declaration of the pandemic when the switch was turned off. Like, okay, this is going to be a two-year op, and at the end we turn off the switch. Boom. And we don't pop the corks on the champagne. We don't say what happened. We don't say now we have to have, criminal trials of all the predators and murderers from the past 2 years. We don't say anything. We just say, okay. No more vaccine passports except for here and there. And no more mandates on the vaccines. They're going to be court cases if a corporation says you got to get the vaccine, like they did when they went along with the government like fawning slaves and said, hey, if you want to come to work, you got to have the vaccine. Now they're not saying that anymore. Or if they are, we go to court. Okay, it's kind of over. And Fauci says it's over. Just said it's over. Then incredible virologist, Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, said it's not over. And then Fauci reworked his original remarks, and he said, well, people misunderstood me because what I meant to say was the acute phase of the pandemic is over. That's all, but, blah, 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 blah. And it all dribbles out. They could reinstate everything if they wanted to tomorrow. Lockdowns, mandates. I mean, they could just try, you know, rerun the whole thing again. Oh, we got an outbreak of 65,000 cases in Portland, Oregon, and it's spreading to California. Lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. And here we found cases in Maine, and, you know, boom. They could. But what they've chosen to do is to let the whole thing just kind of peter out with no explanation, except, oh, the vaccine's working. That's about all they can say. But they're not even, you know, they're not marking the day. They're not celebrating. They're not saying we won the war. They don't want to. They don't want to call attention to themselves. They just want to let it dribble away. And right around that same time of the dribble away, guess what happened? A war in the Ukraine. And suddenly everybody's attention was now focused on the much bigger threat to the world. Putin, Russia, Ukraine, Zelensky, Agakikikik. NATO, and that takes over the news completely. Wow, isn't that marvelous? People saying, COVID? Yeah, not important. We're just moving on from COVID. Well, 2 years of vast economic destruction, ruining untold millions and millions and millions and millions of lives and whatever the thing, and vaccines killing people right and left, and it's a shadow memory. It's a vague thing. We don't have to think about the war in the Ukraine. On the other hand, is looming monster on the horizon. Magically, it just appears at the very moment when a complete distraction from the 2 year tunnel of COVID is needed. I just bring that up as a thought, you know, as a thought, as a thought, as a thought. Now, sticking with the vaccine, continuing. I made this statement several times as soon as I saw the insane Trump warp speed plan to develop a vaccine. Which would involve RNA technology. An experimental technology that had never been released for public use in any fashion before, on any scale whatsoever. And this technology is supposedly a genetic technology that induces the body to do things that it wouldn't ordinarily do. Produce this protein, produce that protein, whatever. And so I pointed out two things. I'm just putting a note down here for the second one, which I'll get to in a minute. And the first thing I called the RNA gold rush. And I said, look, one of the main purposes of this whole COVID op is to push through into the marketplace, come hell or high water, no matter how, RNA technology. And you can see this very clearly from Moderna, which is one of the companies that has been granted federal monies through the good offices of Fauci, working it out, so that this little pipsqueak company, which has never brought a product, a drug of any kind, a vaccine of any kind to market, never, suddenly gets $500 million from the government to develop an RNA vaccine. That's how bad they want an RNA vaccine. And what I pointed out was the following. The thing to know about RNA technology when it comes to vaccines is that you can produce these vaccines much faster and cheaper than you can by the traditional route of making traditional vaccines. What it will take you years to do to bring a traditional vaccine to market will take only a few months with RNA technology. That's why they want to drag RNA technology across the finish line now with a COVID vaccine, which they can do because they can keep howling about the desperate times we're in and the people and the dying and that we have to have it and it's all, you know, they'll get that done. And then they can say, well, now that we have RNA technology in the marketplace, we can go back. We can take all the traditional vaccines that we have, God knows how many of them there are, and we can rework all of them into RNA vaccines and produce them in great volume, much more, much quicker, much faster, much cheaper. And we can make new profits and impose them on the public. It's like selling old shoes made new. We just go back to all the old shoes and we add new soles to the old shoes and we sell them again. Hey, we got the widget here. So we've done really great with the widget, Bob. We've sold God knows how many of those suckers, but you know, it's kind of declining now, or it's old hat. Okay. We need something. Well, Bob says, well, look, we just have to call the old widget something new, and then we have to add a new wrinkle to it, and then we can just sell them all over again. Yeah. So there's that. And then there's this. In their labs, you can have the virologists, quote, discovering, meaning faking the discovery, of all kinds of new viruses that nobody's ever heard of or seen that don't exist. And you can develop quickly, cheaply, in great volume, RNA vaccines against all of those brand new viruses and impose those on the public and sell those and make billions and trillions of dollars. That's what they wanted, and that's what they got. And I kept saying that early on, as soon as warp speed was announced. And that should have been a major, 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 major story just on the financial pages alone. Bonanza. It's a bonanza, folks. And then people would have been alerted to say, well, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. You mean, oh, man, you mean this is a marketing thing, among other things. And the second thing to know about RNA technology is that it is definitely an attempt to induce genetic changes in the body. They want that technology in the marketplace. Not just here and there, but everywhere, because that's the coming wave. That's Brave New World. That's technocracy. That's the Great Reset. That's all of that. We want to re-engineer the human species. And the way we believe you can do that, one of the great ways, not the only way, but one of the great ways, is through genetic genetic engineering. And of course, you want to make people more passive. You want to make them more compliant, obedient. You want to divide them up into castes of status, genetically speaking. All of this has been laid out. I've given readers the quotes over the years. Just read again Brave New World by Huxley. It's all there. Now, there are serious problems with the technology, the genetic technology, both from the point of view of safety and efficacy, as they like to say. The efficacy part is they bullshit your socks off about what they can really do. They overplay that hand all the time. And when it comes to safety, that's the second point that I wanted to make about the COVID vaccines, the RNA vaccines, which are apparently, you know, that's what this is being promoted. This is what it's all about, is to make genetic changes in the body. To use coding to provoke the body to make changes it ordinarily would not make. And genetic technology always produces ripples down the line that people did not anticipate. And I've written extensively about that. I call it genetic thunder. And people have overlooked this monumentally as well in analyzing the downside of COVID vaccines. They don't want to talk about it. I don't know why. I really don't. It's major. When you tinker with genetics in the human body, you are walking into a minefield. You're rooting around in the dark. You're claiming you know things you don't know. You're claiming you have technology that is safer than it actually is. You're telling all of these lies, and you're going forward with the experiments anyway, and you're producing results that are beyond your control. And I've given examples of this. You know, we tried to produce this kind of animal, but he actually turned out to have a much longer tongue. Who knew that was going to happen? That wasn't what we were trying to do. We were just trying to give him slightly different ears, and now he's got this giant tongue. How did that happen? Well, back to the lab. It's domino time. We're only going to have three dominoes fall here. No, you're not. Because those three are in a line of 60 trillion. And don't even think that the three just lead to 4, 5, 6, 7, because that's not an accurate model. It's more complex than that. It has more dimensions. It's not just one line of dominoes. So it could go one falls, two falls, three falls, 568 falls in another line. Why? I don't know. Neither do they. Genetic thunder. Well, we don't really want to talk about that. No? Why not? Huh? We've got this fantastic genetic cutting tool called CRISPR, which is, you know, one of the great innovations in human history and would enable us to do very simple genetic changes very easily, whereas it took us 6 months to do one little thing. We can do the same thing now in 3 minutes, and anybody can do it. It's very easy. In fact, and this is true, you can buy basic CRISPR kits that you can fuck with at home and create little changes in whatever bacteria, make them glow and shit like that. Yeah. And they want to protect the reputation of these technical tools and say, oh my God, this is just simply amazing. Yeah. And what about the downside? What about the cuts that don't turn out the way that you thought they would? And when you cut things and then you cut a section out in the middle of it, and you join two things together that weren't joined before, something happens at the join that you didn't expect was going, well, we can straighten that out. No, not really. Genetic thunder. And some of the people, I have to say, who will say to you, warn you about the dangers of genetic engineering. For some reason, they want to make the assumption that the great genetic researchers in the secret labs know exactly what they're doing all the time. I don't know why, you know, it makes the theory stronger, I guess, of the danger. Because ill intent turns out to be mastery over the ill intent, and therefore they can do anything they want to with the human body and so on and so forth. That's not the real picture. You have to include in the real picture that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. It's beyond their control. Genetic thunder. And that may well be some of what's taking place now with the COVID vaccines, that people are trying to pin the tail on the donkey to and say, okay, we know why that happened. We know why this happened. We know why. Take a step back. Some of what's happening could very well be the effect of genetic thunder. Ripples in some people's bodies as a result of the vaccine were not predicted, were not intended, were not even thought about, because these people are completely reckless. It's experiment time on the human species. And you can bet your bottom dollar that, as in any intelligence agency type covert op, they're also doing after reports on people who are vaccinated. Not the kind of studies that I want them to do, but taking samples, trying to figure out how the experiment is working and what it's actually producing, because they're quite willing to put the entire human species into the lab. The planet is the lab, and they would like to know how it's working out, because they're not finished. They're just getting started. Lessons learned. What do we know? What did we find out? And let's now just run the film all the way back to late 2019, early 2020, Wuhan, China, where the whole thing started, the whole op, all the propaganda, all the declarations, all the announcements, all the lockdowns at the beginning. You had a city that was drowning in pollution, air pollution. You had protests on the streets the summer before by the citizens of Wuhan. And you don't go out on the street and protest in China unless the situation is incredibly dire, because you can get arrested, you can get tortured, you can get disappeared, you can get all kinds of things happen to you. But there the protests were. And then in hospital in Wuhan, people began showing up with pneumonia, lung infection. Okay? Forget the label, pneumonia, lung infection, problem with the lungs, congestion, okay, pain, whatever. And the pollutants in the sky above Wuhan were not just atypical, they were unprecedented, because they contained elements of both early industrial revolution and modern industry, because that's the way China is. Certain of their production is old-fashioned and certain is cutting edge. And the various pollutant elements mix up in the atmosphere, and the synergistic effects are completely unstudied and completely unknown. So you've got people showing up in the hospital with pneumonia. Okay. Is that a big deal? Well, in China, you've got roughly 300,000 people dying of pneumonia every year, like clockwork. And that means you've got millions of actual cases of pneumonia. So is that a big deal if you've got 40 people showing up with pneumonia? Now, the researchers decide, well, we have to go to work on these 40 people because this is astonishing, and we have to find out why they have pneumonia. Okay. All the researchers had to do in their labs was look out the fucking window of the building that they're in, and they would see why the people have pneumonia. It would be the air that you can't see through outside the window. That's why. But no, they don't do that. And then on top of that, they say, and so do lots of other people, oh, but wait a minute, this was not just pneumonia, this was atypical, this was not different, this was unheard of and unprecedented type of pneumonia. Really? How do you know that? Well, from the pictures we took, the x-rays. Really? Yes. And then you look at the pictures and you look at the descriptions of those x-rays and you find out there is no convincing evidence that these pictures were atypical. Not at all. What about the ground glass effect in these x-rays? That was heralded, you know, by all kinds of people, mainstream and alternative. This is different. The ground glass effect is a metaphor for an opaque effect. That's what you see in the photos and the x-rays of the lungs. Opaque. Gray or white. And all attempts to say, well, this is not just opaque, it's atypical opaque because this and that, does not take into account, again, that you're dealing with very atypical pollution in the skies above Wuhan. Nobody really understands, because it's got all these crazy elements mixed in together, and nobody has studied the synergistic effects. So claiming that these strange, opaque x-rays of these 40 pneumonia patients in Wuhan indicated it must be a virus is total horseshit. Total and complete unwarranted, inferential horseshit. That's how it started in Wuhan. From that, we got everything for the next 2 years. From that. Reduce the pollution in Wuhan? Do something drastic about that? No. No. We don't want to do that. Let's call it a virus. Let's say it's a virus. Let's use the virus cover story one more time to hide the ongoing crimes of pollution that are killing people and injuring people and making people sick and children sick in Wuhan and other major cities and in China and so on. Let's do that. Let's just say it's a virus. Let's just cover up the truth with a story about a new virus that we never really discovered. Cover story. Yep. Why doesn't anyone want to talk about that? You tell me. You tell me. Because it rings too many alarm bells. Because if the virus is a cover story for what's actually going on, then the next question to be asked is, well, then what is the, quote, virus actually? If it's really functioning as a cover story, that smells like propaganda. That's what you're saying, right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, well then, wait a minute. Are you saying then that we're not really talking about a virus? We're talking about a story about a virus? And if that's what we're talking about, then maybe we better look at the whole science of discovering viruses, which is called virology. But we don't want to do that. We must not do that. We can't do that. That would upset way too many apple carts, not just now and in the future, but in the past. And who wants to go there? And there are many, 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 many doctors, medical personnel, researchers of various kinds, investigators, and so on, in both the mainstream and alternative fields, who have enough of an interest and a belief, and I don't want to say a stake exactly. It's a kind of, I would say, maybe religious stake in certain stories that the medical cartel tells, that don't want to disturb those stories, that want to believe those stories and use those stories to make all kinds of other inferences and conclusions. So if you go too deep in exposing cover stories, you disturb all of that, which must not be disturbed. I've seen that over and over and over. Let's not talk about that. That's just a distraction. Let's just leave that alone. That's not relevant. That's ridiculous. Of course SARS-CoV-2 exists. Of course it does. That's the main argument. Is the of course. You know, if you know how to say those two words, you're halfway home. Of course the virus exists. Of course the virus exists. Yeah. And whereas some people want to and will say that vaccines are highly dangerous, and they give you the reasons, okay, fine. They don't want to say that they're entirely useless and irrelevant, because the things that they're supposed to be preventing are these viruses that were never discovered or proved to exist in the first place. Oh, no. We're not going to go there. So, one of the things that I didn't get to say in part one about Eleni Papadopoulos of the Australian Perth group, heroes. I can't give you the date when they first broke the news, but let's call it, okay, somewhere around 1990. Might have been earlier, might have been a little later. And the news was HIV was never isolated. And one of the things that Eleni said was, look, the traditional process that everybody agrees on for discovering a new virus is you use a centrifuge, which spins this material that you took from the patient with other material that you add to it, and you spin it at a very high rate, and it settles out in the centrifuge at what's called different density gradients, and you know what those are. And when you stop the centrifuge from spinning, you know which gradient, kind of like an archaeologist, which stratum to go to look for a potential new virus. That's where you go. Okay. That's the conventional, accepted, agreed upon wisdom. And what she was saying, or one of the things that she was saying, is that the conventional researchers didn't really do that when it came to HIV. They did not go to that specific gradient and prove that's where they were, that density band of material in the centrifuge, extract from that and say, this is where we found HIV. They did not do that. They did not take their own agreed upon advice, take the experiment all the way and get to the conclusion either yes, it's there or no, it isn't. Therefore, the whole thing is non-scientific, or what I would say, bullshit. So we are definitely looking at virology itself. And we have other heroes, Tom Cowan, Andrew Kaufman, Stefan Lanka, David Crow, David Raznick, Christine Massey. They have come at this so-called science of virology, not just concerning SARS-CoV-2, not just HIV, but the entire program, historically speaking, of discovering so-called viruses. How do you discover something that you don't truly isolate? How do you discover something when you define isolation to mean the reverse, to mean it's in the soup somewhere, we don't see it, we can't find it, we don't look for it, but it has to be there? How do you discover new viruses when, without having one, a specimen, you then pretend that you can actually find its genetic sequence? What it are you talking about? How would you possibly know in Wuhan, back at the beginning, that what you needed to do in these 40 or so cases of lung infection, you were supposed to be looking for a coronavirus out of the trillion to the trillionth power potential viruses that exist? How would you know that? You wouldn't. You couldn't. You would assume, you would guess, you would presume, you would lie, you would fabricate for a reason. A covert op reason. That's why you would work as you do in the lab. That's what you would do. And so these people I've just mentioned, these heroes, who have stood up against all manner of criticism and attacks, that's why these people have asked very serious questions and done very serious investigations and called into question the very roots and foundations of modern disease medicine. As they should. And to ignore this or to let go of it or push it aside would be a huge, huge mistake. Because when you think about it, the entire premise of Rockefeller medicine for the past 100 years or so has been a distinct disease caused by a single germ. And in many, many, many cases, that germ is a virus. And from that proceeds an incredible amount of fraud and human destruction. Because the drugs are toxic. The vaccines are toxic. Killers. And if you don't want to expose that, something is wrong. In the last conversation I had with Dr. Barbara Starfield, let me back up and just give you a little background on her. She died about 10 years ago, tragically. She was a revered mainstream public health expert at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. A hero in her own way. On July 26, 2000, in the Journal of the American Medical Association, she published a review, which I have covered dozens of times. Is U.S. health really the best in the world? And she concluded that every year in the U.S., the medical system kills 225,000 people and injures millions more, like clockwork. And if you want to add up those figures and extrapolate, you would immediately see she's talking about 2.25 million people killed by the medical system per decade. And tens and tens and tens of millions of people severely injured. And I have cited her review and other studies that back that up in articles. That's another biggie that very few people want to touch, either in the mainstream or the alternate universe. I've been hammering on it for years and years and years. Apparently, it's too much. It'll defame too much of the medical system or something. I don't know. What's the problem? What's the fucking problem? Who with any conscience wouldn't want to expose 2.25 million people killed by the medical system every 10 years? And as Starfield told me when I interviewed her, she said my figure was conservative. Other studies since then have pegged it higher. So, in the last conversation that I had with her, one of the things she said was, and she was annoyed, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically she said, I don't want to be thinking about and entertaining all of these separate and distinct so-called diseases. When is the medical system going to look at the whole body and see the interconnections and the relationships among different processes and the breakdowns that occur and cross-reference and so forth, as opposed to their program of saying, well, there's this disease with this label, and then there's that one, and then there's this one, and then, thousands and thousands. And that's what she was saying. And she was right on the money. Because that Rockefeller system, which has pervaded the world, of one disease, one germ, another disease, another germ, is what we're saddled with now. And the COVID fraud is just another illustration of that, which goes without question for most of the world because they have been trained and conditioned like monkeys to accept the basic premise of all of these distinct diseases, each one of which has a separate and distinct cause. And that is not the case at all. What would happen if a major researcher said tomorrow, you know, what we've now shown is that this breakdown in kidney function is related to the adrenals, which in turn are related to generalized levels of hormone production in the body, which themselves are connected to the following factors, and those and all of a sudden we're now looking at connected stuff, cross hatching. One thing happens because of another thing, and it's like billiard balls hitting each other on the table, and you have to back up and you have to look and find the biggest picture you can and see what's going on. And everybody and his brother wants to have a magic bullet. I don't give a shit whether it's conventional medicine or alternative medicine or supplement companies, whatever it is. Everybody's got to promote some kind of a magic answer and magic bullet. Because that's how they've been trained to look and think and wish and hope for. So that's why the fraudulent science called virology very definitely has to come under very close observation, deep observation, making no prior assumptions. Well, these people have been working for decades and they know what they're doing. They have the degrees and the certificates and the standing and so forth and blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. And then there are people who just can't fathom how the virologists could be on the wrong track. I mean, how could they just be making all of these fundamental mistakes and not seeing it? That couldn't happen, therefore they must be on the right track. There's that. That's a big one. You have to overcome that. You have to understand the psychology that most of these people are true believers, even though they are, quote, scientists. They accept certain assumptions without question. They accept certain symbols or markers to indicate certain things that those markers really don't indicate. But they accept them and they never question them again. So they're always working at an abstract level and making all manner of assumptions and inferences that are not warranted. And they just don't think about it. They're true believers. And then you have those who understand that it's all a con and a ruse and refuse to speak up because their reputations, their money, their status, even perhaps their lives are on the line if they do speak up, if they do blow the whistle. Psychology, not the crap brand of psychology, but the real kind of psychology that tells you why people think and do what they do. And when you grasp that, you begin to see, okay, I can understand how a whole branch of science could get it so wrong and cover it up. I'm not making any excuses for the virologist, far from it. But I'm refuting the argument that goes, well, they would never do that. They would never consistently be wrong when they say they've discovered a new virus. That couldn't happen, so they must be right. Which is basically what most people say or think when you bring up the issue. That's what's underlying their objection. No, that couldn't be. That's their bottom line, you see. That couldn't be. They're not selling you a jet plane that's going to crash. They're not selling you a house that's going to fall apart. They're not selling you a pesticide that's going to poison you. But that's what they do. Sell you a pesticide that's going to poison you. And so when I and others have gone down this rabbit hole to that point to say they're not discovering viruses, they're discovering what they want to discover. It's preordained. It's symbolic language. It's abstraction. It's not reality. Naturally, there's going to be pushback. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to say, well, okay, if you can't believe me, I'll stop saying what I'm saying. Really? Is that what you want to do? Now, on the other hand, I completely understand the people who, for example, are doing very good work in pointing out the dangers and the destruction of the vaccine, but they don't want to take up the issue of the existence of the virus. Fine. I have no problem here. I'm not going to spend and waste my time pushing to have such a person change their mind about the existence of the virus for several reasons. I would never do that. I'm just going to report my findings in no uncertain terms. Not just in dry, sober analysis, because I can do that, yeah, sure, but also with some energy and determination and demand and rubbing people's noses in it. And that's an interesting place to be in an investigation of the rabbit hole. Because that's what you come up to or down to eventually, is something you find that the psychology of people at large are not prone to accept. They don't want to accept it. They are averse to accepting it. It acts as an irritant to them. It's disturbing, not just on some rational level, but on some kind of muscular level. It's disturbing to them. Fine. Let it be disturbing to them. Okay. So I wanted to do this part two to clarify the differences between the AIDS op and the COVID op. And to emphasize how horrendous the whole lockdown strategy has been, and how it's been covered up in the media, astonishingly, but understandably. Because the media, which claims to be so interested in human interest stories and the suffering of people and highlighting all of that in newspapers and television and all kinds of spin-off entertainment, news type shows, etc., 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 have uniformly failed to say, wow, we've got millions of human interest stories of people suffering from the lockdowns that we can promote. We can enlist all kinds of sympathy and empathy from the public during the lockdowns. I mean, it would be amazing television. No, of course not. Not going to do that. going to upset the apple cart of the whole covert op of the entire program of convincing people that the lockdowns are absolutely necessary and we all have to make sacrifices for the greater good. And isn't it wonderful that we're at home now with the kitties and we're playing with toys on the floor and we're spending more time with the family? Remember all that bullshit that the public service announcements, athletes were being enlisted in the cause as if everybody was retired, with a nice fat bank account from the NFL, and God, it was great to be with the family again at home, and even though it's locked down, and gee whiz, it's wonderful and all that. That's where they went with that. Because if they went out with a camera into the streets of New York and saw all the boarded up streets and the deserted, desolated, like from some sort of a crazed sci-fi movie landscape that actually exists in New York and other great cities and all over the world, and then go into the apartments of the people, the business owners, and to see what happens when that kind of destruction is wrought up close, personal, day to day. Document it. Show it. You'd have a revolution on your hands after a while. People wouldn't stand for the lockdowns. So that was part of the messaging, too. To not cover it, what's really going on. So even today, you've got people, many people, who look at the word lockdown as, you know, a sort of a ghost of what we had to go through, and it was not pleasant, and it was disturbing on some levels, but really, it was necessary, and the boop a boop a beep a bop. That's all they think. That's all they think. And some guy that had a grocery store that he built out of nothing, through years of labor with a few people in his family, making a living. Sweat of the brow, baby. Friends to his customers. Local, real, human. The kind of place that people wanted to go into because they knew the guy and the guy knew them. And even if their lives weren't, you know, total joy all the time, when they walked into that store, they felt good and everything was okay and they got what they needed. And that place is totally fucking destroyed. And that guy's livelihood and his family, gone. Done. And those people that got pleasure and some measure of happiness from walking into the store and shopping don't go in there anymore because it's destroyed. They got to go somewhere else. And how many times that's repeated? And how many times workers in major corporations have been intimidated by their employers? Well, look, we'll decide if you can work at home. We don't know whether you can work at home. Maybe it'll be, we'll see. But you can't come to the office during the lockdown. That's for sure. May have to lay you off. Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have to lay you off. But we might bring you back later. But then later comes some, you could come back, but you got to get the vaccine. What? You don't think it? You think experimental? Dangerous? What the fuck are you talking about? You want to come back and work or not? If you want to come back, You got to present evidence you've had the vaccine. And if there are boosters, you got to take the booster. You got to take the whole thing. And if you have a heart attack and die, that's just part of the deal. Don't blame us. Or find another job. Those are the rules. Oh, yeah, there's that, too. There's all kinds of stories out in the great lands of the world about the lockdowns and about the mandates and about the passports and about the vaccine that are not being told. Yeah, my brother, the baseball player, we went to see the game, the whole family. We were out there. And the third inning, when he's running from second to third, he suddenly collapsed on the field. He's 24 years old. Healthy as a horse. And he's lying on the ground. Collapsed. And the ambulance comes in and they take him to the hospital. And they say he's had a heart attack. And they're trying to save his life. We bring him home after 3 weeks in the hospital, and he's not the same, or he dies. And he just got the vaccine. Well, there's no connection. What do you mean there's no connection? There's nothing wrong with him, and all of a sudden he took the vaccine, and now he's dead. How do you know there's no connection? What else would it be? You getting those stories up close and personal every day? No. It's part of the messaging. What not to cover. Okay. That's part two. There's more. There's more, but you've got a bunch. You've got an orchard full of trees that's got fruit hanging up all the branches from part one and part two. And for now, that's where I'm going to leave it. And my suggestion is you come back to it. You re-listen, because I've covered a long range of territory here. Long range of territory. If there's anything more that I would want to, you know, just as I'm about to end it, of course, I keep thinking of more. That's the way it goes. The lab, the virology lab. Well, we did this. Well, we did that. And that's how we isolated the thing that we isolated. Uh-huh. Sure. Where is it? How did you do it? What's the process? The process is not saying and claiming while pointing to your diplomas and certificates, we found the virus. The point of the exercise is submitting yourself to open debate of great length and extension and detail as to how you did it every step along the way. And as I've stated in writing, my bottom line on the whole thing is the following. My bottom line. You open up your virology lab where you discover the virus. And we send in three or four of our own expert people and a video crew with many cameras, And we document every single second of every move you make in the lab. And we stop you at various points whenever we want to ask questions. What did you just do? What was that? What does it mean? And we listen, and then we say, well, how do you know? How do you know that's what it means? Because it could mean this. It could mean that. And we wait for your answers, and we got it all down on tape, sound, audio, video. We document everything because, you see, you're treating your lab like it's the holy of holies and only the initiated can enter. And you bring down the tablets from God inscribed on stone and tell us what we are supposed to see and know and believe. We don't take that shit from you. That's my bottom line. That's reasonable. That's what government agencies are supposed to do. Not that they do. Well, the FDA went in and inspected a vaccine maker's facility and issued 27 citations for safety. Well, presumably they looked at the assembly line. They looked at what workers were doing. They looked at cleanliness. They looked for rats and roaches. They looked for contamination of samples. I never believe these inspections are carried out to the fullest extent. In fact, there's ample evidence they're not. But that's what you expect. So why wouldn't you expect that in virology labs? And that's my bottom line on whether I'm going to buy your claim that you discovered a new virus called X37 or SARS-CoV-2 or HIV or whatever it is that you're working on. And we're going to carry that procedure all the way through to the supposed sequencing, genetic sequencing of the new virus. Every step, every move you make, every email you send and reply you get, every single thing you do, we want to know. That's my bottom line. That will resolve many, 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 many questions. And I've been told, wow, that's ridiculous. How could you dare say that the thing? What are you talking about? Why wouldn't I say that? I would say that about a mental institution, you know? Hey, you send people in there with video cameras and guns, if necessary, you know, from law enforcement to examine every single room, every single patient, every single doctor, piece of equipment, method, treatment, to see if they're really torturing the people in these facilities or in a nursing home. What does inspection mean? What does checking up on you mean? If you're deciding the fate of the world in a virology lab, we want to know what's going on. We're going to have those cameras over your shoulder. We're going to have them right there on the microscope on everything. We're going to be stopping you hundreds and thousands of times and saying, what was that? What did you just identify there? What do you call that? How do you know that's what it is? And one of our experts says, well, to me, that looks like one of these. That's not a virus. Oh, yes, it is. Well, how do you know that? Stop everything. Let's get that down on the record. They want you to believe that if you were insisting on such a thing, you would be insane. You see, you've got to grasp this. Otherwise, what I'm doing here is in vain. You've got to grasp this, that they're trying to make you think that if you strenuously object to what they're doing and not showing you, You're insane. You're out of line. You have no business making such demands. Do you see? When the truth is just the opposite, how could we believe what we're being told is happening in the virology labs in, quote, discovering new viruses, unless we're there, unless we have people there whom we trust, unless we document exactly what's going on every single second of the way and question every single thing that is happening and debate? How could we know? And if we don't know, where are we? That's sanity. That's what I stand for. You may not agree, you may not like it, whatever it is. But think it through if you have your doubts, and I believe you'll see that this is what sanity is. This is sanity, and the opposite is complete insanity. Well, you have to believe these people. They've established that for decades, that these viruses exist. So, well, then they have the certifications and the training, and who else would know, and they're the experts, and how dare you question what they're saying? Of course, we understand, and it's ridiculous. You're distracting from the things and the fact and making us look bad and by asking these questions and blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. Sanity is demanding to be there where you're not supposed to be. Okay? You're not supposed to be there. They're telling you that you can't come in. They're saying that. See the sign above the lab? Only authorized personnel, etc. Super secret, sanitized, level 3, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we can all get sanitized and go in there. We're no different from you in that respect. That's sanity. The reverse is trained insanity, posing as sanity. It's the height of the obedience to authority complex that is infecting the entire human race. That's what it is. Please don't disturb us because, you know, we're impelled and compelled to salute authority. That's what we do, and we can't have any of this interruption and disturbance in our environment. We have to salute the authorities. It's imperative. Imperative, huh? I tell you. If they say A, it is A. We got to start there. We have to. This is the stimulus response that, as we see, can lead to utter destruction, as the COVID op has. Starting in the virology lab, we found a new virus. You must bow down. Bullshit. The sanity of demanding to be there and see exactly what is going on is uncontestable. That's the truth. That's the position that I take. That's my bottom line. Everything else is some kind of trained monkey response to authority. And the authorities are going to train you to respond to and respect authority and believe in authority. What the fuck else are they going to do with you, with anybody? That's their training. That's their school. That's where they operate. I'm telling you this now, and nobody else is really telling you this with the same degree of of whatever it is, of the truth that I'm giving it to you right now. We have to overturn an entire apparatus of entrained embedded mind control to restore the sanity of rejecting unfounded authoritarianism. That's what's necessary. And so, if I pour a tremendous amount of energy into that, you can understand it. Think this through, I'm saying. Where else would we want to be except in the virology lab with the cameras and our experts asking all the detailed questions and stopping at every move? What was that under the microscope? You just made a note. What did it say? Really? That's what you inferred from that speck you just saw? Explain that. What else would you want if you were sane? Oh, that's ridiculous. They've well established in the... No, they haven't well established anything. They just repeated the same bullshit over and over again in 8 zillion studies, and therefore you're taking the total pile of what they've said as being indicative of the truth. That's absurd. Think it through. What is the sane response? That's my bottom line. Thank you very much. This is John Rappaport.